This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com. Our radio show is heard on Pacifica stations nationwide, and you can watch our TV show on Free Speech TV and on our website. The Senate Committee on Banking this week unanimously approved neurosurgeon and former presidential candidate Ben Carson to head the Department of Housing and Urban Development. 11 Democrats joined their Republican counterparts in approving Carson, who is as inexperienced in government as President Donald Trump. The Democrats included progressive stalwarts Elizabeth Warren and Sherrod Brown. Carson will now face a vote by the full Senate, which he's expected to easily win. What does this mean for public housing around the nation to have at the HUD's helm a man who knows little to nothing about public housing? My guest is Larry Gross. He is the executive director of the Coalition for Economic Survival. That's a grassroots organization based in Los Angeles, California. Welcome to the show, Larry.
Good to be with you. It's been a while.
Yes, thank you so much for being on our program. First, for those of us who aren't steeped in the ins and outs of public housing and what it is that the HUD does, give us a sense of what Mr. Carson would be overseeing. He probably has needed this lesson before he takes the helm of this job. What is it that the Housing and Urban Development Department actually oversees nationwide?
Yes, it's an extremely important department, especially for low-income renters and homeowners in the United States. HUD has a budget of some $50 billion. It employs about over 8,000 people. It oversees the federal rent assistance programs that serve over 5 million lowest-income households in the nation. It provides Section 8 rental vouchers to 2.4 million low-income families, and it also oversees the 1.3 million public housing units that are there to provide housing as a last resort. It administers tens of billions of dollars in community development and disaster recovery and homeless assistance, and it enforces fair housing laws and acts as one of the largest mortgage insurers in the world. HUD plays a critical role in alleviating poverty and stabilizing and revitalizing communities and preventing housing discrimination and ensuring inclusive communities and providing safe, affordable homes for poor, elderly, and disabled. Has a healthy homes program and also a lead remediation program. And so the concern here clearly is
this is a very complex department with a complex set of responsibilities.
Extremely so. And so the concern here is that, you know, you have a person like Ben Carson, who has been deeply critical of social welfare programs. He's characterized the country's safety net as of cash assistance as a failure of putting a dependence on government of low-income people. And he's shown a complete disregard and open hostility to government efforts to confront the racist and discriminatory practices in the housing industry.
So he may know nothing about housing, but he is a conservative, and so he espouses these conservative right-wing views on things like housing development that do alleviate poverty. What are some of the things that, you know, what are some of his opinions on these things?
Well, some of his opinions are in line with Donald Trump. And you know, we're witnessing a Trump administration that instead of cleaning the swamp has created a cesspool of people who are unqualified, unethical, incompetent, corrupt and crooked, and who don't care an iota about the most vulnerable. And Ben Carson, you know, fits that description. He has some beliefs that people think, you know, if you didn't know it, he'd be coming from outer space. I mean, he has, as you stated, no professional housing experience, and his own admission, he said that he was unqualified to run a federal agency. And Carson in the past has attacked the Section 8 rental program, which is a crucial program that ensures that low-income people have a roof over their head. He basically said that this is what you see in communist countries, where they have so many regulations that have, you know, overtake every aspect of your life. So he's extremely hostile to any type of government assistance programs, and he stated that in the past. So, you know, we were extremely disappointed with the Senate Banking Committee. You know, I can't think of anyone higher as far as a progressive in the Senate as such as Elizabeth Warren, and was completely disappointed that she chose to support him based on some promises that we believe that he either doesn't know what he promised and will likely unfulfill.
Let's actually look at that quote that you gave in more detail on Section 8 housing. Ben Carson has said in the past, this is what you see in communist countries where they have so many regulations encircling every aspect of your life. On the Fair Housing Act, this is a really, really important act. On the Fair Housing Act, as Carson said, these government-engineered attempts to legislate racial equality create consequences that often make matters worse. I mean, if government isn't going to help engineer racial equality, what is the government's job to begin with? I mean, you know, you could argue then that things like the Civil Rights Act and the Voting Rights Act were the government's attempt to legislate racial equality, as was the Fair Housing Act. I mean, it's quite incredible, but this is in line, of course, with this idea that if the government is there, the government that's funded by us is there to help us, that somehow that's taking money out of the pockets of the billionaires that Ben Carson and Donald Trump serve.
You're exactly right. And we've seen it already. You know, one of the first acts of the Trump administration, mere hours after the inauguration, was to suspend a pending rate cut for mortgage insurance. And this action will directly hurt working and middle-class first-time home buyers. It will prevent them from getting new homes. So it's not even only the poorest of the poor, but these actions are going to have an impact on the middle class and working people as well. You know, it's really interesting. You know, in 1964, President Lyndon Johnson declared a war on poverty. And here we are, 53 years later, with Donald Trump trying to turn back the clock and essentially declaring a war on people living in poverty. And so this is where we are right now. And so it's going to take mass movements like we saw last Saturday with the Women's March and to keep that up and to confront, you know, any type of injustice wherever and whenever we see it. We're going to need to all us being those who are working in organizations that are fighting for social justice and for economic equality and against racism, we're all going to be having to work much, much harder. We're going to have to be taking even bigger risks, and we're going to have to commit ourselves to empowering more people to get them involved and to mobilize to take these issues on. Because if we don't, it's hard to even imagine how many people are going to get hurt, how many people are going to be left homeless, how many people are going to be without jobs, how many people who are not going to be able to feed their families or provide medical care to themselves and their families.
I want to just stay on the issue of what the Democrats did for a minute, Larry, because you know, we want there to, you know, there is a difference between Democratic administrations and Republican administrations. We see that in the margins, in decisions that Obama took versus Trump, usually Obama being pushed into doing them. However, to see Sherrod Brown and Elizabeth Warren vote in the Senate Banking Committee to approve Carson so that he basically had a unanimous stamp of approval from this committee before going to the full Senate just defies logic. He did not need their votes. They could have easily voted against him. He would have passed the committee. He would have gone to a full Senate vote. He would have passed that. He would have ended up where he's going to end up without their support. Wouldn't their symbolic disapproval have meant something? Why did they give Ben Carson something he didn't even need?
Well, yes, you're absolutely right. I was as shocked as you are. I mean, what it sends a message to the poor renters of this nation that the Democratic Party will not have their back. And that's why we need to push. You state that there's a difference between, you know, Republican and Democratic administrations, and that's absolutely true. Unfortunately, there's also a difference with Republicans and Democrats who are not in power. And so we saw for the last eight years, the Republicans drawing a line on basically everything that Obama tried to do. They said, no, we won't have it. And that's why we didn't have appointments. We weren't able to deal with some of the problems with the Affordable Care Act, and we can go down the line. Whereas when we look at the Democrats, they're willing to cave at a moment's notice. They're not willing to go to the mat in favor of protecting the people that they say they're supposed to be representing. And so that's the great disappointment here, is how much are the Democrats are going to really fight? And especially, you know, with concern over the Supreme Court nominee, are they going to go to the mat and disallow, you know, clearly a Supreme Court justice who will have tremendous impact on every aspect of our lives? And so it's going to take that movement like we saw on Saturday, not only to confront the Republicans and the action of Donald Trump, but it's also going to have to be there to give these Democrats a backbone to stand up and fight on behalf of those of us who are going to be impacted by these policies.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought up the Supreme Court justice issue. That's one place where President Obama could have made a recess appointment, at least to temporarily place Merrick Garland on the Supreme Court. A lot of progressives are disappointed he didn't go that far enough, and we'll be covering that story in the coming days. But Larry, in terms of what's next, there's the issue of long-term organizing to maybe either organize for a remake of the change in the House and Senate leadership in 2018, whether you want to pour your energy into the Democratic Party or not. But then there's also grassroots organizing. However, what good is grassroots organizing for communities that, through some action that Ben Carson takes in the next 6 months, could lose the social safety net that they have relied on? I mean, you know, what are the kinds of things that ordinary people can do? For example, can the state of California step in? California, which represents, for Californians, that is. I mean, this doesn't apply to other states.
Well, I think California can do some things and pass some laws to protect. But look, California does not have a progressive bubble around it that some people might think we have. We're going to be significantly impacted by these cuts. I mean, they've already said they're going after, you know, sanctuary cities. And so, you know, Los Angeles is a sanctuary city. And this is going to create more fear and anxiety amongst immigrants who are living in housing right now. And so we're going to have to, as community organizations, we're going to have to continue to go door to door. We're going to have to organize building by building. We're going to have to bring those buildings together and continue to fight. We don't have a choice in this situation because what is the alternative? If we sit back and do nothing, people are going to be out of the streets. They're going to be deported. They're going to be without food and shelter and medical care. And so, you know, one of the things that what's going on here, it's got to be the alarm bells here. One thing we know, that this is no longer business as usual. And so that's why I said we as organizations, as activists, we're going to have to take things into our own hand. We're going to have to work harder. We're going to have to take more risks. And we're going to need to hold not only, you know, the Republicans accountable, but we're going to unfortunately have to push the Democrats to stand up on our behalf. And we're going to need to get people involved. then we need to ensure people are registered to vote, and they have to be registered, and they have to vote, and they have to run for office, because if they're not going to do it, then there are surely people in the community who have the will and the commitment and the backbone to stand up to these kinds of assaults on these our communities.
Well, Larry, I want to thank you for the work that you do. Can you give out a website for Coalition for Economic Survival?
It's cesinaction.org.
And we'll post that to our website later today, cesinaction.org. Larry, thanks so much for joining us.
Oh, my pleasure, and thank you for everything you're doing.
Larry Gross is the Executive Director of the Coalition for Economic Survival, a Los Angeles-based grassroots organization. This is Rising Up with Sonali. I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com. We're also on Twitter at twitter.com/RUWithSonali.